I'm Jordan Abel, Director of Public Programs at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, and I welcome you to BINA, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the JCCSF. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of BINA, we feature representatives from Senior Housing Services in San Francisco to discuss co-housing alternatives, accessory dwelling units, and maintaining relationships between landlords and tenants. Joining us for the next hour are Karen Kopik of Home Match SF, Wendy Burkhart of Silver Nest, Jeff Buckley, a senior policy advisor to the mayor's office, Scott Goring of the Bar Association of San Francisco's Conflict Intervention Service. And now, join Dr. Margaret Chesney, Professor of Medicine at the UCSF Osher Center for Integrative Medicine, on stage at the JCCSF as she introduces our panelists.
So we have Karen Kopik. We also have Wendy Buckhart from Silver Nest, Jeff Buckley. I've been talking about Jeff. This is your chance to hear from somebody from the mayor's office. And then we have Scott Goring round us out from the San Francisco Bar Association Conflict Intervention Service. So I'm going to now introduce, tell you a little bit more about Karen, just really quickly, and she can say more. She is the director of Home Match San Francisco. They have part of a corporation that has programs in Fremont, Marin, and Costa Costa counties. And Karen has years of experience following her education at Cal State and Tufts Universities. She was internationally recognized before taking on this wonderful position she has at Home Match for innovative strategies and partnerships to address important challenges. And I began the day by saying we have a real challenge here for housing for those of us who are seniors, including myself, here in San Francisco. So Karen, we're eager to hear what you have to say.
So how many people are familiar with the Golden Girls, the TV program from the 80s? All right, almost everyone. So the basic premise is you had a woman, I think Blanche was her name, that either was divorced or widowed and wanted somebody to help with the expenses of her home. So she put an ad up or a flyer in her local grocery store in order to find roommates. She found a few roommates, and there were these four vibrant women that ended up sharing expenses but really sharing their lives together. Well, nowadays, you don't have to go to a grocery store bulletin board. There's a lot of different offers, and Wendy will mention, we'll talk about two today, opportunities to help find that perfect roommate for you for both income, if you need, and also for community. So Home Match San Francisco, the program I run, we are a program by two nonprofit organizations, COVIA and Sequoia Living. We're funded through the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development. And I think it's always interesting to tell you about our program by the story of one of the people that are participating. So we're going to talk about Carmen and Michael today. So Carmen gave us a call one day and said she was looking for someone to share her home. She's lived in the very same home that she was born in, so many, many decades. But even nowadays, if you own a home in San Francisco, with property taxes, home maintenance, and the decreasing value of Social Security, sometimes it's just a little extra income every month can make a very big difference in feeling more financially stable. So I went out to visit Carmen's house. We reviewed her paperwork. I had verified that actually Carmen is who she said she is. She owns her home. And then more importantly is we did a tour of the home. So I met her cat, which is this lovely little cat, and just asked kind of how she engages in the home and what her ideal housemate would be to really understand what she's looking for so we can match her with somebody who would be a really good match. And this is where Michael comes in. So every week we have somewhere between 2 to 5 people that come into our office that are looking for affordable housing. Affordable housing in San Francisco, we work with people that earn less than 90% of the area median income, which in the city is about $75,000. So when we talk to our peers in Texas and Idaho and other places, they're like, how can $75,000, how can you qualify? That's a huge income. But here in San Francisco, you actually qualify for some of these affordable housing programs because it's just so expensive, the rental markets. So we have awesome people like Michael that come in. He had lived in an apartment for a long time, and they were turning it into a condo. So he needed a new place and was struggling to find a place in the city. We do the same process with him as we did with Carmen. So we interview him. We do a background check for both sides. We verify his income, And then we ask him a lot about what he's looking for in a match. And so when Michael was speaking, we thought, oh, we think he's actually going to be very interesting for Carmen. So now we start the matching process. So I call Carmen up, and I'm like, Carmen, I have three awesome people that I think would be really good matches for you. Let me tell you a little bit about them. So we introduce her to them a little bit and explain who they are. We'd like to give a few different options because you never know if that chemistry will be there or not. So when we talk to her, she's like, you know, I think I'm going to have a phone call with all three, and then I'm going to invite them to our house. We say, great. We're happy to help in any way. If you want us to come out, if you want to meet in our office, however you want to do it, but we're available to do whatever you feel comfortable with. So Carmen's like, I'm just going to meet him, and we'll see how it goes. So Carmen called us, and then an hour later, Michael called and said that they met, everything is great, they're super excited, they want to move forward. So we call this like the honeymoon stage. We're like, awesome, now it's time to check references. And 9 out of 10 people are like, oh, no, we've already decided. I know they're good, I want to live with them. We say it's not about good or bad. Our entire process is designed to help you learn as much as possible about the person. So use it as an opportunity to ask, you know, how do they communicate? What bothers them? How do they deal with conflict? So use it as an opportunity to learn even more about them so that when you're living together, you understand how they operate and you can be more successful cohabitating. So they did that, and still they're like, we want to move forward. So I went over to Carmen's house, and Carmen, Michael, and I spent about 2-3 hours together going over what we call a living together agreement. So the first half is like 5 to 7 pages of house rules. You know, who's gonna clean the bathroom? Who's gonna buy the toilet paper? Are overnight guests okay? I joke with my husband. Well, he doesn't think it's funny, but I say that if he and I had done this before we moved in that first year, it would have been a lot smoother of a year. So he doesn't like that. But it's all about setting expectations up front and having these hard discussions before you have any issue. After the living together agreement, then it's move-in time. So on move-in day, we call up, call Carmen, call Michael, how's it going? We're super excited. And we call them in a month. Hey, you know, the first week is awkward, you know. So after a month, they're kind of getting in the groove. And then we continually check in to see if they're okay. We're always available if there's ever an issue or a problem to come out and help moderate or mediate. And also, Scott's going to speak in a few seconds from the Bar Association Conflict Intervention Service. And we have a great partnership with them where if we need to take it to the next level and we need additional support in mediation, we have some great pros to be able to do that. So our main goal is to make sure, for us, it's not checking the box that is, have you placed somebody, but it is really is, have we created this community, a community of two that are supporting each other to the benefit of both. Our services, since we received the grant from the mayor's office, they're free of charge. You don't need internet access, although you know we do think we need to infuse more technology into our process. And we are a personalized hands-on service. So like we mentioned, we'd love to chat with you all and help you find just the right match for you if you're looking for someone to share your home or your life. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Karen. Next speaker is Wendy Buckhart, who is the CEO of Silver Nest. She's responsible for driving the company's overall directions and strategic growth. Wendy has more than 25 years of experience working with venture startups, emerging technology companies, Fortune 500 corporations, but now she's using all of that history to do something very, very special in terms of Silver Nest and helping us deal with this housing crisis that we have. Wendy.
Hello, everybody. My story is going to sound similar to Karen's, and then I'm going to tell you how it's different in different places. As all good stories, I think, begin, mine began with a personal story. About 5 years ago, I lost my father very suddenly, and my mother actually lives outside of Atlanta, and I'm in Denver. So she was almost halfway across the country from me, and she and my father had met in high school, and my mother had never lived alone in her entire life. Now, she's really independent and super strong and had the benefit of being financially in a positive position. But emotionally, during that transition, it was a really big deal because she had never had this experience of being by herself. And of course, I'm the paranoid, anxious adult daughter on the other side of the country worrying about her and worrying about how she's doing. And she ended up having a friend move in for about 9 months. And that friend actually had lost all of her assets in Hurricane Katrina and was struggling financially. and needed an affordable place to live. And so she moved in with my mother for the financial assistance that it provided. And for my mother, it was an amazing emotional connection for her. And in the end, it was a fabulous and successful relationship. They would still be living together, except that my mother's friend actually likes to travel around the world, and she keeps kind of bouncing out and trying new things, and then she'll come back to base every now and then. I think they're probably going to end up together in their later years. But the entire experience of that really prompted a big question for me, which was, what happens as you age and, as you look at your housing solution? And for me personally, I don't have children, and so I think about that a lot, about, oh my gosh, what happens if I'm just all by myself? And I had a very dear friend who had been in the aging space and was designing new forms of housing for the aging population. And in that experience, he said, do you know that right now in this country, we have over 4 million empty bedrooms that are owned by people over the age of 65? And he said, why can't we use those extra bedrooms to put people together and allow them an option to stay in their home? And that's really where Silvernest was born. So I will skip through a few things here, but one of the things that I tend to share with folks that I speak with is, you're not alone. If you're finding yourself in a new and unique situation related to choices that you have to make about your housing or your finances as you move into your next chapter of life, you are not alone. There are 90% of Americans right now who are saying that they really want the option to stay in their house. They don't want to have to move into a new place. They don't want to leave their community, their friends, their family, the places that they've been for a long time. And 80% of that same population right now do own a home. And so they have a home that they can rely on as part of their retirement assets. That's really important because for 30% of this population right now, they are spending excessive amounts on housing expenses. And it's going to continue to be very difficult for individuals to stay in their home due to the rising cost of living. So even if folks have an asset and they can sell the asset, moving into a new location can be challenging because of the cost of living, and even just staying in that home can be very challenging. There's a statistic out right now that says there are 50 million people over the age of 50 who have less than $50,000 saved for retirement. I find that a shocking statistic, and I think it presents maybe a bigger conversation that we should all be having about what's really happening for us. So home sharing, as Karen described, once we started to talk about what can the alternatives be, we recognize that home sharing could be a viable option, but we also recognize that, hey, you're not 22. So the idea of living with somebody that you don't know is not necessarily going to be comfortable. How can we help stand up a solution for folks that make it feel comfortable to consider? We know that the benefits of home sharing include potential extra income, potential assistance around the house, companionship, and within that, additional safety and security of having someone else in the home. But there's a truth to the fact, too, that after a certain age, myself included, we get a little particular about our kitchens and our bathrooms and our living space and who's in that space. So we set out on a mission to see if we could employ technology to try to help introduce home sharing to folks who might not otherwise consider it by building in a suite of tools to make it easy to move through that process. Silvernest today is an online home sharing platform. We work to manage an entire life cycle. So similar to what Karen's organization is doing, we are working to manage a relationship from beginning all the way through the end. We have a community. We have a proprietary algorithm that pairs people based on preferences and what type of roommate they're looking for. So a lot like a dating site in the sense that we'll pair individuals. All of the contact information is kept proprietary. We keep all of that information behind the scenes. And we work to connect individuals securely in conversation and in vetting through our platform. They have access to a 5-point background check. It's a 5-year eviction history. We do identity verification on individuals. And then once individuals have found one another, we too walk them through a home sharing agreement. They have access to legal counsel. They have access to mediation services. And all of that is done through the platform, and it's managed through the platform. We are fully scaled nationally. We've had over 60,000 people come through the platform since we started 3 years ago. And last year, we helped the participants on our platform recognize almost $40 million worth of financial impact. That was based on a homeowner who was charging an average rate of $800 a month for a single bedroom. And in a market such as Denver, where the cost of a one-bedroom apartment is on average about $1,500 a month, that represented a significant savings to the renter to be able to move into that environment. So we were pretty excited that we were able to help individuals recognize that benefit. We then provide the additional access to tools ongoing for the duration of your relationship. So not just at the beginning, but from all the way through the end. And if you need to terminate that agreement, we have access to 17,000 lawyers across the country who you can call and ask for expertise on anything that might be needed to as it relates to this particular relationship. As I mentioned, we've had really great success, and some of our best success stories are actually some that are of the most surprising. We've had, on average, our average homeowner on our platform tends to be female, between the ages of 60 and 65, but we've had folks as old as 101 come onto the platform who are typically there with assistance from an adult, you know, decision maker in their life. And some of the best stories are the ones that are the most surprising. So, for example, we had a female who was on the platform who was 62, who was seeking someone that resembled herself, and she ended up pairing actually with a young man who was a 31-year-old retired Marine. And I remember she said to us, "Oh my gosh, I never expected this to be the type of match that I was looking for." But they had a very successful home sharing relationship for 18 months until he moved on to go and get married. So we love those stories. We love that we are able to help. And we've been recently working with Karen and her team here in San Francisco in collaboration. And that's been really exciting for us as well. So thank you.
Thank you so much. That was great, Wendy. Let's move on then to Jeff Buckley. He's a senior policy advisor to San Francisco Mayor London Breed, and his focus is on housing. He's handled numerous mayoral initiatives, including the Housing Trust Fund and the Public Housing Re-envisioning effort. And through his effort, San Francisco has secured approximately $2.8 billion in affordable housing funding over the next 30 years that will preserve and create 30,000 units of housing for low to moderate income households. His background included being a social worker and a community organizer in the Tenderloin. He's a graduate of the University of Vermont. So, Jeff.
Yeah, so, housing is a very large topic. I think for seniors, there's a lot of different options that are available. Many of them, I think, are really in ways out of reach economically from the options that others may have. So what we have focused on when it comes to senior housing is aging in place and allowing seniors to have more options, including their own property, that they could create units within either a single family setting or within a multifamily setting if you own multiple apartments. So I wanted to focus my statements on accessory dwelling units. So accessory dwelling units are kind of a hot issue in housing and have been recently. But, you know, as short as 15 years ago, accessory dwelling units was an extremely controversial topic. I remember Supervisor Aaron Peskin, when he first was on the Board of Supervisors about 15 years ago, introduced a legislation that would have legalized accessory dwelling units around transit corridors. He actually had to pull the legislation because he didn't have the votes at the Board of Supervisors with his colleagues. Now, fast forward about 15 years later, we've had multiple code changes from the Board of Supervisors to legalize and liberalize the use of accessory dwelling units. And that has occurred both within our apartment buildings as well as in single-family homes.
Thank you.
You're listening to a special panel discussion on senior co-housing in San Francisco with Karen Kopic of Home Match SF, Wendy Burkhart of Silvernest, Jeff Buckley, a senior policy advisor to the mayor's office, and Scott Goring of the Bar Association of San Francisco's Conflict Intervention Service. They're joined in conversation by Dr. Margaret Chesney on Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
So what is an accessory dwelling unit? This is, you know, it's one of those classic kind of like planning terms. It kind of like accurately describes it, but frankly is like, sounds like a planning person made it up. It's commonly also known as in-law apartments or granny flats is a name that also has come to mind. But so what it is essentially using underutilized space within either, you know, an apartment building or within a single family home and creating a dwelling unit out of it. It's pretty common here in San Francisco that people have done this, created in-laws over the years, primarily in single family homes, without the benefit of securing permits. This is not, you know, this is very common within the city. We, you know, officially, you know, it's not legal housing, but it's also housing that many people use. So what we have tried to do is two different programs. One is to allow the legalization of those unpermitted homes to be apartments and to then go through, you know, the conversion process to apply for permits and then ultimately to legalize that residential use. I think the program that I think is the most exciting, most interesting is what is creating new in-laws both in single-family homes and in multi-unit dwellings and apartment buildings. So I am particularly interested in talking with you about the use of in-laws within single-family homes, frankly, because we're actually underproducing those units to the rate that we have single-family homes. And I think part of it is just confusion around how those laws, you know, the fear of having to kind of come down to the planning department or building department, and to be honest with you, it can be a pretty intimidating place to go pull a permit and go through the process of trying to legalize that or to create a unit. And so the mayor has paid particular attention to this because we see it as a real opportunity to add housing within the existing neighborhoods without changing really the character of those neighborhoods. And adding units that otherwise, you know, you would not know that density is being added without the benefit of following the permitting that's been going on. So the mayor has really looked at this issue, and what we realized before her term is that it was a hot mess. So we had permits that equaled about 900 units that had been applied for over the years, but ultimately were not being worked on by city officials, because city officials hadn't really agreed on all the different code technical requirements that were needed in order to legalize that use. So in other words, the Board of Supervisors got far ahead of really where the administration was about being able to create ADUs. And so the mayor has taken it upon herself and directed me to oversee the process to make sure that we could get those 900 units and get them out into the market for people to rent. And so that's something that we've focused on, and she issued an executive directive that ordered that backlog of units to be cleared within 6 months. That was 4 months ago. We encouraged to say that we have had close to 500 units approved in the last 6 months, which is more in 6 months than we have done in the 4 or 5 years of the program. And that's by getting the city departments, and I know this shouldn't sound like we should have already been doing this, but we to get them around the table and say, hey, folks, we need to come up with a faster, more efficient way for people to do this so that they have confidence that they can actually, when they apply for a permit, it's not going to be a scary process. And so we have not only done clearing those backlogs of permits, we've also created a new timeline. The permits need to be reviewed by the city within a 4-month period. We have also asked the Department of Building Inspection through legislation to waive some of their fees associated with the creation of these units as a way of also incentivizing people to start thinking about it. And so for older adults, it's a great opportunity after you create a unit to be able to, when you're ready, to move down into that unit if you so choose. And you can, you know, then you're creating space for either your family or another family to be able to live in a single family home so that we're really kind of using our space as efficiently and as smartly as we can. And for us, we really see this, even though it's a micro part of what I do, it's really important because I think it's a real opportunity for homeowners to gain equity and gain value in their home, but also a way to use your homes in a more efficient way and create space for other people to live in.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Very interesting. And good. And that's an amazing feat that you've moved things that quickly. Really incredible. Then now we're going to hear from Scott Goering. He's an associate mediation counsel in the Bar Association of San Francisco's Conflict Intervention Service program. He's an expert in mediation. He's had 17 years of experience as a residential property manager, so he knows what it is to have residential properties to manage, and he's known for finding creative solutions to housing problems, and he mediates disputes between family members, tenants, and landlords. Scott.
Thanks so much, and I'm not sure there was a clip that I had available. Was that going to go?
This is Conflict Intervention Service, a groundbreaking program in San Francisco aiming to reduce homelessness by preventing evictions. A free service to residents and providers of supportive and affordable housing across the city, CIS started in 2016 with a grant from the City and County of San Francisco. The primary mission of CIS is to resolve conflict between housing providers and residents to avoid eviction among vulnerable populations, particularly the elderly, veterans, persons with disabilities, families with children, and those with mental and behavioral health conditions. We do that through mediation, conflict coaching, and facilitating difficult conversations, all supported by social service professionals. We respond rapidly and flexibly to any conflict that disrupts affordable housing communities and wherever a vulnerable individual faces the loss of their home. Most of our cases are reported through our helpline, where anyone may report a situation. CIS mediators are highly trained, interdisciplinary professionals with decades of experience.
So thank you for that. There are a lot of stories of what it is that we do, but in short, mediation, for those of you who are not already familiar with it, is part of what's called alternative dispute resolution. I work at the Bar Association of San Francisco, and I'm an attorney of 14 years, and I know enough to know that there are typically far, far more efficient ways to resolve conflicts that individuals have amongst themselves than going out and hiring a lawyer and seeing if you can fix it that way. And I say that as a lawyer and somebody who's been there. But I can also tell you that so much of what we have come to recognize in the last couple of years in looking at housing conflicts really has to do more with just the exchange of information and oftentimes just the facilitation of a conversation between individuals. And in the current housing climate, because everything from the San Francisco rent ordinance to just the way in which neighborhoods are changing, I have friends visit me from outside California, and they go, dude, what's up with your city? There's construction everywhere. And that just speaks to the fact that housing is such a hot-button item here in this town. And as has been stated by the other speakers so far, as much as possible, we want to insert ourselves at CIS in such a way that if you are having a conflict in your housing somehow, that we find a way for individuals who are involved in the conflict to communicate, whether it be we sit everybody down at the same table. Part of what was mentioned in the video is conflict coaching, just like how do I talk to a person who interprets everything that I say a particular way. And sometimes it requires a third person, a mediator, who comes in to help have that conversation. But sometimes it's just talking through it with that person so that you can go back into your home then and find an efficient way to communicate with the person so that you are able to maintain just peace and enjoyment in your housing situation. As much as possible, we want people to remain in the homes they have. And that's what we do. So we have a helpline. I have some literature that I'm happy to share with people, but we man the line 24 hours a day. If you give us a call, we'll get back to you within 24 hours. We have a very wide panel of mediators. I have everything from seasoned litigators, not that you need a litigator, to licensed psychotherapists, to a number of different language choices. And we're able to sit down with the parties who are involved in a conflict and find a way to resolve that conflict so, again, everybody can enjoy their housing in peace and quiet as best as they can. So I invite you to come up and talk to us. We don't decide conflicts for people. We don't give legal advice, but we help people have conversations that they might not otherwise have for themselves. And we're happy to make that service available.
Thank you so much, Scott and other panelists. First question, this one's for the mayor's office. Will these legally in-law units also be rent controlled? How will that work?
So that's a really good question. And again, this is one of those issues that I think we need to clear up. So I'm going to do my best to answer that in the least complicated way possible. So if you are an owner of an apartment building and you add an ADU into, let's say, a storage space or a parking garage, you are virtually guaranteed or highly likely that that will be a rent control unit because the building that is in its place is rent controlled. And ultimately, you would require a waiver of our planning code or some other exception. And we ask that of owners to put that new unit that they're creating under the ordinance. But single family homes is not the case. So it's, you know, here's the rules, is that if you require a waiver of the planning code as a single family home adding an in-law unit, then you would more likely than not be, you know, under, you would put that unit under the ordinance, under the rent control ordinance. But if you do not require a waiver of the planning code, then the unit that you create would not be subject to rent control.
Just a quick question, Jeff, what do the permits cost, just in general, so people who might be considering that? I know that it's hard to say it's going to be this amount, but just generally, what are we talking about?
So the cost of adding an ADU, which I think, because the permits are based on the cost of construction, so it's a hard question to answer. What I would kind of prefer to answer is this, which is, the what we are hearing from the market about what it costs to construction in ADU is anywhere from $100,000 to $250,000, depending on the complexity of what it requires, and also depending on how you want to build out that ADU unit. Some ADUs are studios, so those would more likely than not cost less than something that is a two-bedroom. So it really depends on what you would be constructing, but the cost ranges are anywhere from $100,000 to $250,000. So I'm not a private market expert, but from what I understand is that your traditional lenders would be interested in lending on this, particularly if there's equity within the property. It's something that you can leverage and ultimately amortize over a 30-year period. And with what rents are within the city, if you were to rent it out, it's likely that you would be able to not only get back what the cost of that loan would be, but also likely exceed it and get some extra income.
Thank you, Jeff. Here's a question. There's a number of questions about co-op housing units and so forth. But Karen, you had a question. Is HomeMatch also providing help to form multi-person co-op living spaces?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. We're not right now, but one thing we've been doing is we have generally in a lot of the programs, you have more people seeking housing than we have houses. So one thing we've been doing is connecting people and even thinking about doing maybe a networking event where it is find your roommate. where people can actually find each other that are looking, see if they have something in common. And it's always less expensive if there's two or three people that can go together to look for a place. So that's something that we're doing to try to address, to try to help more people find solutions for themselves. And particularly single parents and parents. There's been a lot of interest in getting together and even sharing some childcare and babysitting and things. So we've been toying with that a little bit.
This person wrote, I know of multi-generational co-housing projects in Netherlands. Okay. Thank you. Are there any planned or existing in the San Francisco Bay Area, the more multi-generational?
Yeah, I'll answer. Maybe Wendy will chime in too. But one thing we are working with is a lot more universities. Some people like the idea of living with a student, particularly international students. So we are working with the universities to see if we can do some placements. And also we find sometimes people, our average homeowner is around 70, 71, generally female. Our average roommate is about 54. And that's actually, some people like that generation gap where they say, you know, we don't want the party to be at home, but we do want a little bit of different in generation. So everybody defines that multi-generational a little bit different.
Okay, here's a question for Wendy, and then we can probably, there's some others related to this. Just a quick question for you. What is the cost of being involved in the Silver Nest platform?
It's $25 a month.
Okay.
For as long as you use the service.
And a question too is, and this would fit, this will bring in a few of you, what if it doesn't work out? You know, can you just evict the person that's matched to you or you
we
break
call
up?
Scott.
I was going to ask. And also for you, Karen, what have you, you know, you gave us this wonderful scenario, it was gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Have there been any problems and how does that handled? Call Scott?
Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, call Scott is actually a valid, that's our backup plan. I think a few different things. One is we really try to help people know each other as well as possible and set expectations up front. You know, things always happen that can't be guaranteed, but I feel like that really makes a big difference. There was just an article in the paper this morning about how it was an ARP study where they found that where there's most tension in a home sharing situation is when people moved in without setting expectations in the first few months. So we do that before you even walk in the door. And we've literally have people where we spend 2 hours going over this living together agreement, and you get to, can you have marijuana in the house? And one says, oh yeah, and the other one, no, and we walk away. So it's good to walk away at that point. If there are issues, like we say, we're happy to come out. We've definitely had conversations with people. And I think like Scott says, sometimes just listening is helpful. And then we do have the partnership with the Bar Association where I feel like that's super qualified people with a lot of different resources that can help. Thus far in San Francisco, the average tenure is about 10 months, so it's actually not as we would have thought it would be a little longer. We haven't had any major issues, you know, thus far. It's great. We have about 200 homes in four different counties around the Bay Area. We've only had one that got really sticky. So we really think some is attributed to that our process, and then also we think that sometimes it attracts a different type of person for home sharing.
Let me jump in on that, if I may. So the reality is a lot of these conflicts, like I said, and I don't want to sound real touchy-feely, but a lot of this, just from experience, has been getting people to have a conversation. And as much as people say, well, it's really about this issue and this issue and this issue, I've come to recognize when people say it's about this, that's not typically what it's about. I had a conflict last Saturday where there was the communication between housemates had broken down so badly, and we got all the big issues taken care of, and it came down finally to this one last little issue. And one housemate just needed to hear the other housemate say, I see how badly I hurt your feelings and how upset you are. And he wouldn't say it. Hmm. And so I'm going to have some further conversations with these individuals. But here's the point, is that a lot of this can be taken care of if we can find a way to have not just a recitation of facts, but having an empathic exchange. Now, that said, sometimes I did a mediation yesterday where really most of what happened in a conflict between people who are occupying the same space has to do with, let's have an exchange of actual information. Like, oh, you paid for this? Okay, I didn't realize that. That's how much that cost? Okay. Oh, these are your receipts? Great. And now that's very, you know, factual. It's very kind of nuts and bolts. And sometimes that's what needs to happen. But I guess my point I want to make is this, is that we feel like we're able to be adaptable to the situation. We will do some initial case workup with folks, talk to people, you know, get some understanding as to what's actually going on, and then getting folks around the table, or even sometimes just getting people on a conference call. We are eminently flexible and responsive to get into the middle of whatever your situation is if we feel like it's something we can help you with.
This is Bina, KALW series featuring artists and thinkers who've spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's program is a special panel discussion on senior co-housing in San Francisco with Karen Kopic of Home Match SF, Wendy Burkhart of Silvernest, Jeff Buckley, a senior policy advisor to the mayor's office, and Scott Goring of the Bar Association of San Francisco's Conflict Intervention Service. They're joined in conversation by Dr. Margaret Chesney. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
A lot of questions about co-housing in the San Francisco area, and what is here in the city, and how has that worked out in other Bay Area communities? Is there someone, one of you, that can talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, again, we have, you know, the growth patterns within California, in particular the Bay Area. We live in a largely suburban area. So it's not surprising to me that as people age and as folks age in either single family homes or maybe very small apartments, that we see a desire to kind of come together and I think have a more shared experience. I think one of the things that one of the benefits is just like it breaks isolation. And so I would imagine if you're living in Concord or you're living in a place that may be far more car dependent than places in San Francisco, I think that, you know, it can create a community. So, you know, in many ways, this is kind of one of the places where it would thrive. Plus, we do have a very good public transportation network. So even in our far-flung suburbs of the Bay Area, they're usually connected with some form of public transportation. So some of those networks are there. But I think it takes kind of innovative approaches like Home Match and Silvernest and others to kind of take a shared concept that people think about and then, you know, say, oh, wait, I can actually do something about it. And that's kind of uniquely kind of Bay Area because you're matching up a need with like the technology to kind of make it happen. And, you know, that's one of the things within the Bay Area that we really, you know, have one of the top kind of technology hubs.
Okay. Here's another question, or how does this relate to Home Match and Silvernest? If a person has subsidized government rent subsidies, or how does that work? Are you able to engage clients with those?
So I think if it's referring to the housing vouchers, we actually, from what I understand, we need to get permission from the housing authority in order to, and the individual homes would need to be registered and approved. So it's something that we're actually talking to our city partner about how we can do that. I actually feel like, to me, the rent is guaranteed because it's paid by the government. So I would think for homeowners, it sounds like a great opportunity because you know rent's going to be paid. So I feel like it's a really positive thing. We just need to figure out what processes we need to do in order to get us and our homeowners approved in order to work in that scenario.
I'd like to add, it's kind of exciting. HUD actually just recently started to look at home sharing as a solution, and we understand that there are conversations that are occurring right now that would allow vouchers to be employed and used for home sharing, which we believe would be incredibly beneficial because for 85% of the individuals that are participating on our platform, income and affordable housing really is a critical driver for why they're there. And so we're hoping to have to be able to participate in that conversation and learn more and hopefully influence that process.
Thank you so much. I also just want to mention some of the science that I do is focuses on longevity and predictors of longevity. And I just want to just mention, as we're talking about this, that there's so much research that shows that one of the important things for people is to have other people around them, to have just one person with whom they can really talk is very, very important. And someone who cares, someone who's there. And there are studies that showed that that was really lengthens life. And it wasn't just that somebody was there to call 911. It really is just having another person in that space. So this is really, really important for us. Just thought I'd insert that. Yes.
I was just going to add, I don't know how many people have heard the statistic from AARP that says that living in social isolation has the same impact on your health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day, which is crazy. And it can shorten your longevity by as much as 5 to 7 years. So social isolation and independence are obviously two very different conditions. But unfortunately, as we continue to live longer than we ever have before, which is a great thing, our propensity to actually be in isolation increases year over year.
That's a true fact. And it's so important to have ways to connect. And I really enjoy this day and actually this center as a place that brings people together. Let me ask a quick question. What about pets for Silver Nest and Home Match? Any problems with pets?
We find there's two people. People love pets or people hate pets, basically. So we have some people, we just place somebody, she has a little chihuahua, and she's like the chihuahua is the house dog. So it hangs out. There's an office downstairs with 8 people. It hangs with everyone. So it definitely, for some people, it's great. For others, not so much. I think generally, since a lot of the homes here in San Francisco are smaller, and so sometimes having a pet, you know, may not be positive, but we definitely place people with pets.
Here's one other question for Wendy or Karen, perhaps, and that's, could Airbnb come in and do what Silver Nest is doing or Home Match?
Well, so this is what I always say, because so people hear home sharing, and they sort of put it all in the same bucket. And what we've always designed ourselves to be is a long-term cohabitating situation, not a high turn. So like Karen, the average length of our relationships is on average 10 months. That's what we're designed to set out to do. Airbnb, I think, can provide a really good solution for folks that are looking for more of a higher frequency turn. But we're really focused on, in particular, helping individuals stay in their home. They have to be cohabitating. So one thing that we do not allow on our platform is you cannot just be a landlord and list your available property. We disqualify that because you actually have to be living in the same space.
The only thing I'd add is it seems to me that Airbnb is focused more on bringing people from a different place to have experiences in a new place. And so what they're doing is they're deepening, they're doing experiences and nonprofit, you can volunteer with a nonprofit for a day. So could they come into space? Sure, anybody could, but it seems to me that's not really what they do. And so I feel like that's where Silver Nest and us are focused on, let's house the people that live, work, and study in a place, and then let's figure out tourists later. But we're really focused on helping people that live here or work or study be able to find a place to live close to where they work or study.
And it really sounds like it's very reasonable. There's a fee for working through Silver Nest's website that is reasonable, and also hearing from Home Match that this is really designed where people can say, this is what I can afford, and then really working to find something that is effective. This is kind of a dicey issue, so we direct this to Jeff, and I don't want to avoid this because whoever wrote this would say, why
did you ask my
question?
I had a feeling it was coming my way.
So here we go. It has to do with something that was discussed on NPR just, I think, yesterday. It was something around Scott Wiener's bill and about his new bill about that could possibly evict countless seniors. Are you any thoughts on that?
I think that's referring to the state SB 50 bill. So my understanding of SB 50 is that bill would allow for an increase of zoning around transit corridors, so around bus corridors, high rapid bus corridors, around BART corridors, and so forth. So, and I don't have the bill memorized, but I think there's a geographic kind of radius around that space where ultimately it would increase potential density and I believe height of housing that could be created there. My understanding is The senator had a previous version of this bill last year that didn't have strong enough rent protections for existing tenants. My understanding is he incorporated, heard feedback, incorporated that into the existing bill. Plus, in San Francisco, we have very strong laws against the demolition of existing housing and existing policies that make it very, very difficult to be able to do. So the mayor is taking a position on her own of supporting the bill, mainly because we see it as a way of being able to add housing into vacant, underutilized commercial spaces and also some vacant parking lots or parking lots that are being used now for cars to turn that into housing. But we also understand it's a controversial bill and not everybody agrees with it. The idea that it would lead to the mass eviction of seniors, I personally don't see it that way. I know that's one of the concerns that people have.
Thank you for handling that. Is another question, which I think is an easy one for Karen and Wendy, is what about people who have issues around stairs or might need ramps and things like that? How is that handled?
Yeah, I think two different ways. One, if people aren't familiar with Rebuilding Together is an awesome organization, and they really help with home safety. So they'll help install ramps and grab bars, and at a certain income level, they do it for free. So that's a great source. Generally, San Francisco, we have lots of stairs. And it is an issue is if a home has a flight or two of stairs, we leave it up to the person who's seeking housing, and we just disclose that there's two flights of stairs up. Just factual. And then we let the person decide if they, different scenarios, if you have handrails or not, it may be more amendable. I would love to have more houses that were wheelchair accessible because we definitely have some phenomenal people that I haven't been able to place. So both Rebuilding Together is a great resource. And then also, we try to help people, just let them decide what works for them or not for the housing.
Whenever you do something like you think, if I'm in your shoes, it's like after I leave, I should have mentioned such and such. So I'm going to let each one of you do your final, I should have mentioned such and such, and I hope I've captured everything. So why don't we, last comments?
I know we've spoken about ADUs, but there's also a thing called junior ADUs. So it's basically as if you take a master bedroom where you have a bath and convert that into a shared housing environment, so a little mini apartment. And that one is a lot more affordable and could be, like Jeff was saying, that if you had an ADU, eventually maybe you could move downstairs. So say you have a three-bedroom with a master bedroom, you could always move to a different room and then rent out that room. And that's just another way of extending the amount of inventory, allowing you to stay in your home, but perhaps you rent out the master room, which maybe could be a little bit bigger for folks. So just another, they call it lily pads or junior ADUs is a new thing that we're hearing a bit about.
I think this is a really exciting time, and I am constantly amazed and surprised by a lot of the conversations that are occurring right now for the next generation who is moving into the aging definition, because I think that we have, with the technology that's available and with resources that are being really oriented around the conversation of aging right now, I think we're going to see a lot of new options coming into market. And that's really what all of this is about. Home sharing may not be the right thing for everyone, but for those that it does feel appropriate for, at least we can provide an option. And so I think at the end of the day, what we're really looking for are a variety of options so that people can choose what really works best for them in their scenario. And that's one of the reasons that we were motivated to create Silver Nest. And I hope that we continue to see more options for folks that really orient around financial well-being, extended longevity, and really addressing the issues of social isolation.
Yeah, so one of the things that I think about is when a number of months ago I went out and toured a factory housing facility in the Central Valley. And as I was making my way back to the Bay Area, I looked over to all the traffic that was bumper to bumper going into the valley, coming from the Bay and into the valley. And it was shocking to see because it reminded me of Manhattan at rush hour. And but it was also a teachable moment for me to realize that the decisions we make here in San Francisco have a huge impact on not just our city, but also on our region and on California. and on our climate goals and on a number of other things that we need to think about. So we also need to use our space more efficiently. I know, you know, we talked about Senator Wiener's bill. That's one way of being able to approach increasing housing opportunities for people within, you know, around transit areas. But for the mayor, she also focuses on many other things, including micro issues like ADUs. And so they're very important about helping us to be able to use our space as efficiently as we can. We also work, you know, with other entities and other approaches. I would allow one piece of cleanup, which is, I mentioned the rent control in single-family homes. I want you to understand about 80% of what has been constructed as accessory dwelling units in single-family homes is not under rent control. So that is a common thing we hear from homeowners. They're like gripping the table being like, I don't want to be under rent control. And I'm like, well, you have to apply to officially know, but so far the results in single-family homes is that is in 80% of the case, not that case. That being said, you know, you would be subjected to aspects of our just cause eviction protections. So we can't have people evicted kind of unjustly. Things in San Francisco aren't always simple, but I think it's worth, if you're interested in looking at an ADU, it provides a real opportunity to age in place gracefully.
I want to dovetail very quickly on what my colleagues have just said. In housing in San Francisco, there are so many new creative ways to find situations for people to stay housed, keep a roof over their heads. And again, I just, as creative as people can be around that, we can be creative in the way in which we find solutions when problems happen. And I'm a property manager. I had someone suggest me, hey, dude, can I pay in Bitcoin this month? I'm like, okay. That's nothing I would have anticipated 10 years ago. But the point is this, is that we have a whole new set of housing situations in front of us, and we can find responsive, creative solutions to those. I hope that you'll keep us in mind for that. And just to make sure that you understand, I did a mediation last week where the parties, it was a housing situation, and they had concluded, it's almost like a divorce mediation, this isn't working, and we're gonna break up. And even in there, we were able to have a conversation talking about, okay, so I'm going to be staying this much longer for the rest of the time that I'm here. These will be the rules that apply. We can be a part of that creative process for you if that's something you have need for. So we hope you'll keep us in mind.
And I want to thank our phenomenal panelists, Scott, Jeff, Wendy, and Karen, for really illuminating some possibilities of a new future that can help us address this incredible challenge. Thank you so much.
BINA is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and KALW. For more information about programs at the JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Today's program was a special panel discussion on senior co-housing in San Francisco with Karen Kopic of Home Match SF, Wendy Burkhart of Silvernest, Jeff Buckley, a senior policy advisor to the mayor's office, and Scott Goring of the Bar Association of San Francisco's Conflict Intervention Service. They were joined in conversation by Dr. Margaret Chesney, professor of medicine at the UCSF Osher Center for Integrative Medicine. The recording engineers at the JCCSF are Ben Bernardi, Alex Espelay, Dan Folds, Carly Mari, and Aiden Nelson. David Kwan edits and produces the program, and Tina Pimentuan is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Rashanim Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. BINA is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. I'm Jordan Abel. Thanks for listening.